So I'm going to ring the big gong again, and we'll sit for another 10 or 12 minutes. So it's the same instruction, working with stabilizing the mind, being present, but now emphasizing this quality of applying something that balances you, so that you're very aware of your state of mind, first of all, and then you work to try to bring that into some kind of balance. And then if nothing works, you just have a sense of humor about that. And know that meditators throughout the centuries have had the experience of just having to sit with whatever is going on, and no matter what they try, it just continues like that. So that might be what you experience as well. Okay? Also experiment a little with the eye gaze in terms of your state of mind. See what happens to your state of mind if you lower the eye gaze, or if you raise it up 4 to 6 feet in front of you. And just see if those things make a difference. And your posture, see if that can make a difference. You know, the instruction that Trungpa Rinpoche taught and that you've received here is to have the eyes open, and you can work with different eye gazes. And so far I've just discussed close eye gaze and then a slightly more extended eye gaze, about 4 to 6 feet in front. But I thought it might be interesting for you to know the tradition of closing the eyes comes more from the southern tradition of Buddhism, the Theravadan tradition. And the intention there with the eyes closed is it's a more internalized sense of meditation and has a lot of power and a lot of benefit. But we are cultivating something different here, and that's why the eyes are open. So that when you practice with eyes closed, it's very specifically to cultivate a more of a inward awareness. So in terms of Buddhism, that's the intention of practicing with the eyes closed. In some other traditions, one practices with the eyes closed, such as Hindu traditions, and it can be more to go into transcendental states, or kind of a bliss states, or rising above kind of states. And definitely Buddhism does not encourage that. Buddhism is much more about being present, being awake to whatever is arising. But in the southern schools of Buddhism, Theravada, the eyes are closed. Then with the particularly Tibetan Buddhism, but also Zen Buddhism, the eyes are open. Now the Tibetan tradition of meditation is leading toward Mahamudra realization or Dzogchen realization. And so from that point of view, it's a very important point. It's not just arbitrary that the eyes are open because of the fact that it's leading you towards a recognition of this very place in which we find ourselves as a sacred world. And so it's being awake and alert and present to whatever is going on rather than withdrawing and narrowing everything down to just awareness itself, such as with the eyes closed. So the eyes open is actually very significant in terms of what it's cultivating, this wakefulness and this all-inclusiveness. And so we start with the shamatha, which is placing our mind in an object and always coming back to that to stabilize the mind. But that begins naturally to develop or to expand into a wider awareness, which is usually referred to as vipassana awareness. So this wider awareness or development of insight goes along with the eyes being open. Now, I'd like to say just a little bit more about attention and this process of training in being present. Another way you could say that is we're training in the process of waking up into the present moment. Just training our minds in the process of awakening into the present moment, but being present. And I've said that the method for doing this is placing your mind on an object. Another way to talk about this is you can take any simple activity. Breathing is one example. A simple activity that doesn't require much thinking, if any, such as brushing your teeth, for instance, washing a dish, walking. Any simple activity. We have many, many of them throughout our days. Repetitive, simple activity. So take a simple activity and do it over and over again. Eating is another good one. Taking food on your fork or spoon, bringing it into your mouth, chewing, putting the spoon down, whatever. But any activity that is simple, it doesn't require any thinking or much thinking, that you can do it over and over, that it's by its nature you do it over and over. And that could also be touching computer keys or anything like that. Our days are filled with them. And you train in just being fully present with brushing your teeth or washing the dish or eating the food or touching the cup or touching the computer keys or breathing or walking. And when your attention lapses, you just simply bring it back. So this is a description, again, of training the mind in attention or being present. I think it helps to think of this in terms of like coming back to the breath is no more of a big deal than coming back to your toothbrush when you're brushing your teeth and you decide when you begin, just as you're about to put the toothpaste on the brush, it occurs to you in your mind that this is meditation. You make the teeth brushing a little bit of a ritual and it has a beginning and you say, this is going to be a meditation period. And my intention is to stay present as I'm brushing my teeth. And when my attention wanders, to bring it back to brushing my teeth. So needless to say, one doesn't get so hard on oneself when one's mind wanders off from brushing the teeth. You just come back, right? But with breathing, or because you're sitting in a meditation posture and you're in a meditation hall, sometimes we can get really harsh about the fact that we've gone off. So really this coming back is with the attitude of gentleness, or no big deal, or sense of humor, or some sense of lightness, just coming back. So that was a little bit further instruction on attention and how we're cultivating attention, cultivating staying present. We do that in our meditation. We can do it all the time during our post-meditation as well. So one way of describing this is that meditation is just gently coming back again and again to what's right here. Just gently coming back again and again to what's right here. So, you know, after a while, you don't even think about an object of meditation. There's just a continual coming back and a more and more continuous sense of presence, of just being present here. And when that happens, you know that it's happened. Usually it happens just in little blips and blurps, but it's quite dramatic when it happens, because you realize you've never been present in your whole life before, and suddenly there's just this simple experience of being fully here. It can happen when you're meditating one day out of the blue, or it can happen when you're washing a dish. But just a sense of the simplicity of just being present and not being someplace else is a big breakthrough kind of experience. I wouldn't call it a peak experience. And also it's not necessarily, it doesn't last very long, but it's very helpful to have that experience. So we're predisposing ourselves to have that experience, which is called an experience of mindfulness, of being completely present and awake. So you could say that the definition of meditation is just gently coming back to what is right here, and then I'd add another word, and resting. Just gently coming back to what's right here, and then resting. It's somehow hard to find the right word. I used to use coming back to what's right here and relaxing. But then I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who say, but you can't just tell me to relax, because I don't know what that even means. You know, you have to give me a little instruction on how to do that. So I have found with words like relax or let go that these can be very intimidating words, because you feel like someone is telling you something that's impossible, you know. You say, I can't get from here to there, you know. So I'm just trying to find a word that when you come back, there's some sense of softness or resting there. So when you come back to your breath, a sense of resting with the breath as it goes in and out, or coming back to the dish. And so, in other words, it's not coming back and clutching to the experience. So we just have to find our own ways with this. But if you find yourself like all tense washing that dish or brushing those teeth, and this mindfulness makes your whole life into a straitjacket of tension, then you might think, well, I need to find some way to balance this with resting or relaxation or softening. And usually our experience when we become more and more aware through meditation, which you really, really do, and I imagine each of us has experienced this to some degree, which is you do become a lot more conscious about what's going on during your day, and you do become much more conscious of agitations beginning to rise, or much more conscious of the fact that you've been spaced out for quite a while. There is a sense of more awareness of what's happening. So I said that two very important things cultivated by meditation: attention, which I've been talking about. Sometimes that's referred to as precision or accuracy, stabilizing, but being right here. And the other is relaxation. So I'd like to give some guidelines on, you know, basically how to relax, but particularly how the meditation technique that we've been doing, the different places in it that you could be training and relaxing or learning how to relax. So first of all, the object of meditation is the breath going in and out. You can really have a sense of relaxing out with the breath and breathing in deeply and then relaxing out with the breath. Let the breath, the breathing, the feeling of the breath, this is why we talk about feeling it going in and out. You could even say relaxing in and out, or just let it relax you. So breathing in Breathing out, have a sense of that being relaxing. Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, mixing the breath with space. Breathing out and just letting the breath go out into space. And then breathing in deeply, relaxing, and then breathing out, letting the breath relax into space. Now, next week we'll talk more about the out-breath practice, which really trains in a letting go. But you can experiment. If you're very, very tense, or you're feeling you need to be more gentle in your practice, and be more relaxed in your practice, experiment if just the out-breath, instead of in and out, see if that actually helps you to relax, to sort of unwind or rest. Because there can be a sense of breath goes out and it's very, very spacious. It's almost like letting yourself go out into the space. Some people can have that experience. And so if that helps you, and then you just rest out there and then the breath goes out again and there's less attention on the in-breath. Try it and see if that helps you to relax or to bring gentleness into your practice. And just see. So breath is a big one that can really help to bring gentleness and relaxation, more kindness into your meditation. And then labeling is a big one. We're told to acknowledge when we come back and we realize we've been thinking, we're told to acknowledge that with a label, thinking. Now let me just insert something here. In meditation texts, it usually talks about three levels of discursive thought. One is what you might call totally gone, like fantasy. And when you come back from that, it's really like returning into the room. You've been somewhere else. So is there anyone here who's never had that experience? So that's a kind of obvious one, and where you'd say, oh my goodness, you know, I was thinking like a fantasy. It was like completely illusory, even delusionary experience. So when you come back from that and you say thinking, there's a real strong tendency to be harsh. You know, oh my goodness, you know, I just lost it, or critical. So notice your tone of voice when you say thinking. And if it's harsh, like if the word thinking is equivalent to bad, or, you know, a slap in the face, or is accompanied by depression or a sense of discouragement, you know, you're just acknowledging what happened and saying thinking. But if it's accompanied by this heaviness of I've done something wrong, just really notice that. This is a place where you can bring in relaxation and gentleness into the practice. And change your tone of voice. Say thinking with a kind of friendly attitude. So now I'm going to bring in that word friendly attention. Friendly attention to the breath, friendly attention to the discursive thoughts. You see, it's so important, this quality of friendliness. So again, you might say, yeah, but how? So it's some sense of relaxing with the breath, and then when you say thinking, if you notice that it's harsh, actually do the cumbersome thing, which can feel very heavy-handed, but nevertheless, say it again, with a kinder, maybe more humorous or light or gentle voice. So notice your tone of voice when you say thinking. This is actually important. And in the post-meditation, I'll be talking about that at the end of this class, but in post-meditation, it's the same. I'm going to ask you to start noticing this sense of aversion or critical voice and just lightening it up, giving yourself a break. So helpful to see that you're being so harsh and so critical, and know that it's workable. You can change that voice and be more gentle and more kind, more compassionate towards this whole process. So the labeling is actually training in an unbiased attitude. It's not training in criticalness or judgmentalness. It's training in an unbiased attitude, which is, I was thinking, now I go back to the breath. Maybe I only stay with the breath for one breath. I was only with the breath one breath. Then I was lost into fantasy again. You know what's happening. You know what's happening. That's the key point. Not that it's always perfect or ever perfect by your standards. So criticalness actually is an obstacle to meditation. And so it's very helpful to see it and realize it's workable. You can change that voice. Harshness is an obstacle to awakening. And it's always based on conditioning. It's not coming from the Buddha nature. It's coming from the ego, the conditioning, this criticalness. So we try to be faithful to the instruction with a gentle attitude. We train in attention, but it's friendly attention. We train in labeling, but it's friendly labeling. So I hope the wording isn't too corny here. You can use your own wording. But it is the quality of gentleness that I'm talking about. So with the breathing and with the voice, and then, of course, posture, sitting properly and comfortably with relaxation and gentleness. So then the third point along with, fourth, there's posture, relaxing your body, using the breath to relax, using the labeling as an opportunity to bring gentleness into the practice, to train in non-judgmental attitude, a kinder, a more accepting attitude. The fourth point is just the view with which you meditate. And so I'll say something which I think we need to hear this again and again, but we can't control how many thoughts we're going to have. And we can't control what the next thought is going to be. We can't control whether the thought is going to distract us or not. And we can't control how long we're going to be distracted. So in other words, we aren't in control. And to realize that can bring a lot of relaxation into the process. But when we recognize, which is a natural capacity of mind, this is a sign of Buddha nature, is that we do just naturally wake up out of even the most complete, total fantasy. We do naturally come back at some time, sooner or later. Even if it's not till the gong hits at the end of the session, we do come back. And when we come back, we could rejoice that mind has that capacity and just recognize that we've been caught in a fantasy and then simply go back to the breath. Bring as much lightness into this as possible and realize that actually we cannot control what's going to happen, but we can grow in awareness about what is happening. So that brings in gentleness, is that when we're off, we simply come back to the breath flowing in and out. So coming back to the breath flowing in and out. And again, it's not like bad or anything, just simply come back. Trungpa Rinpoche called this coming back with a naive attitude. And he equated it to like when you're trying to get an infant to eat its food and a baby's attention keeps wandering and you have to keep saying, you know, say that like the spoon is a, see the birdie? And then you pop it into the baby's mouth and you just try to keep bringing the baby's attention back. So any images like that that are sort of friendly and humorous, those are good. Those are good. So I began by saying that there are three ways that discursive thought is talked about. So I described one, which is completely gone. Then there's another one which is gone but not completely. I don't know. I'm sure you're all familiar with this, which is maybe like two sentences in, or even half a sentence in, or maybe three sentences in, but you're gone, but not for very long. And then you wake up and you come back. So you're not completely in a fantasy. You're just drawn off by, sometimes it's a sight and then the mind goes with the sight. Or it's a sound and then the mind follows on the sound. Or just three sentences about lunch, but then you realize and you come back. So the instruction is the same there, because that really can be the nature of a whole sitting period. All of these can actually, but that's a very common one where you're drawn off just a little bit continually and you come back. So you just simply come back, no big deal, whether it's in meditation or in post-meditation, you just train in coming back. You see, the wonderful thing about this is if you are training in coming back, if you actually have a commitment to doing this in a relaxed, friendly, enthusiastic way, definitely your mind begins to settle and you just, the natural capacity of mind to be present just comes out more and more. you're allowing for the opportunity for the Buddha nature quality of our mind to actually start to come forward and manifest and be more present. But if we're not training, then actually, if we're not training in coming back, and if we're not training in awareness that we go off, then we are training, but we're training in discursiveness and distractedness. And that's what we've been doing all our life, and probably for countless lifetimes. So it's going to take a long time to counteract this very well ingrained pattern of just not being here, you know. The average life is characterized by, you know, a few moments of presence, maybe one in every 100 moments, or twice in every 1,000 moments, you know, that we're present. And the rest of the time just gone, and we don't realize it. So this period of beginning to recognize these small going offs, as well as these total daydreams or fantasies, this is really important, and it can often be accompanied by discouragement because you say, I'm thinking more than I ever did before. And those of you who have only been meditating for 6 months or a year, or even 2 years, this may be where you find yourself somewhat discouraged by the fact that you feel like it's actually getting worse rather than better. And Ken MacLeod, in his book, he gives a great example. He says that, well, that's somewhat like you're sitting in a restaurant talking to your friend and you get totally absorbed in the conversation and you don't realize that there's all these cars going by all the time. And then when you get up from your lunch and you walk to the curb, there's all these cars. And that's like thinking, well, those cars weren't here before and they just appeared now. But the fact is, you just, before you weren't aware of how many thoughts you have, and now you are. And that's why it appears like more. So this is called, in traditional texts, becoming aware of the monkey mind. Becoming aware of the monkey mind. So don't get discouraged if it seems like more. That's actually a very good sign. It's actually an increase in your awareness or your ability to see what's going on. So those are the first two stages of discursiveness. The third is one where it actually doesn't draw you off at all. You're sitting and you put your mind on the object of the breath and you're staying with it, but there's this little like vague conversation or in and out of thoughts that's happening on the side, but it doesn't draw you off at all. And so in that case, you don't have to label thinking. And in that case, usually there's not any criticism or anything. But the reason I point out this, it's not so much a stage as these are things that alternate. In my own meditation, I know all three of these very well on an ongoing basis. And I could say after many years, there's a lot more ability to just be present, you know, much more frequently. But still, I know completely being gone in a fantasy, and I definitely know the little being drawn offs by sentences and paragraphs. I definitely know that one well. But there's also this other, which is that you're present and thoughts and actually even emotions are arising, but they're just like the crows out there not drawing you off. You know, you're just something that's happening in the background and you're still with the object. And in that case, just let that be. Don't struggle to not have thoughts because that is impossible. So if that's what's happening to you, say, good, this is fine, absolutely fine. I actually don't have to label anything here and I don't have to try to sharpen this up. This is fine. So those are the three levels of discursiveness. So I'd like you to say one more thing about relaxation and then I'll have you stand up and stretch and then we'll do a period of meditation where I'm going to ask for the main emphasis for you will be on relaxation. But there's three words which maybe will be a support for you in your meditation in terms of bringing in the quality of relaxation. Attention and relaxation sort of balanced or mixed up or both happening at the same time. So one word is gentleness, which I've already used. Sort of gentleness with the fact when you realize that you really can't avoid thoughts, you can't control the fact that you'll be distracted, or you can't control how long you'll be distracted for. But gentleness with the whole process. Gentleness with the fact that you've gone off again, yet again. I want to just be present and never go off. Some kind of gentleness with that. So gentleness. The second word is patience. This also brings relaxation into your your meditation, into your practice, into your life, a sense of patience. It can't be underestimated how helpful it is to be patient with ourselves. Patience with what may seem like no movement or no progress or so forth. And it's really helpful to know, in my opinion, sometimes this is presented differently, but definitely in my experience, this is not a linear process. One day there may be just these little blurps that don't distract you at all, or one sitting period, it could be like that, or a couple of days, and then you're thinking, wow. And then next thing you know, you sit down and bam, you know, you until the gong rings, you're completely gone in a fantasy, and then you want to, you know, find a bridge to jump off of, you know. Or at least a cliff, you know. So realize that it does alternate like that, and in some way, Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, this is very good because it humbles you. He said, your mind is a great teacher because you have just enough growing awareness and alertness or increase in kindness or less klesha to encourage you. But then he said you could get very arrogant about that. So you have just enough like discursiveness and lost in fantasy and completely unable to coordinate anything and overcoming wildness and drowsiness and stuff to humble you. So they kind of balance each other. They kind of balance each other. So the third word is sense of humor. Gentleness, patience, and sense of humor can list these three. And he says in particular, a sense of humor as you observe your monkey mind. Just a sense of humor as you observe that your mind is just like a wild monkey. And he has a great quote in the book from an actual Theravadan meditation master. I think it's Gunaratna. And he talks about... before long in your practice, you'll come to the realization that you're totally crazy, he says, and that your mind is like a lunatic bin and screaming and all of this. And he describes this kind of vivid image of a very wild mind. And then he says, no problem. It's always been like that. And the good news is that you're realizing it for the first time, something like that. So this is an example of sort of sense of humor, you know. Remember these three words in terms of bringing relaxation into your practice, gentleness, patience, and sense of humor. And they're very good, a balance for training in alertness, wakefulness, stability, precision, these kind of things. So always coming back when we become distracted, just simply coming back with attention and relaxation, or precision and gentleness. So I hope the point is clear, because I know sometimes some of us need a lot of reminder on this point. I needed a lot of reminder on this point for years. When we place our mind on the breath as the object of our meditation, we don't mean think about the breath. We mean, Ken has an interesting way of saying it, which brings in both the attention and the relaxation. You might feel it's a little corny, but he says, feel the breath with your heart. That's an interesting way of describing it. But in any case, the idea is to feel the breath going in and out so that it has a relaxed quality. And there's an interesting meditation instruction, again, in Ken's book from the Mountain Hermitage tradition. And this is where it doesn't go into any detail at all. It just says, body like a mountain, breath like the wind, mind like the sky. And that might be actually helpful to you as an image. Breath like the wind, so not restricted, just a natural breath flowing in and flowing out. So body is, you know, I'd like to say, actually, this will be interesting for a period of meditation where the emphasis is going to be on relaxation. But during this period, which will be 12 to 15 minutes, try not to move. And that would seem to be the opposite of relaxation. But if your guideline to yourself is not moving, then when you do move because something really hurts and you have to, you'll do it with a lot more mindfulness. So sometimes to say don't move can be actually quite helpful as long as you're not too rigid about this instruction. So it would be don't move. And then, of course, if something really is hurting, you can take the resting posture or if there's an outrageous itch, you can itch your cheek or something. But then you'll do it very mindfully. Whereas if you don't have the instruction, don't move, I notice in my own meditation and actually sitting in front watching other people that there are a certain amount of mindless movements that I imagine that none of us are even aware that we're doing it practically, you know. Or at least maybe when we feel our fingernails on our cheek, then we wake up to the fact that we're itching, but we have no mindfulness of the fact that our hand actually lifted up and went there. So if you can work with the not moving instruction with the attitude of gentleness, relaxation, just a way to help you with your mindfulness, but bring relaxation into it, that's ideal. This balance between precision and attention, and then the gentleness and the relaxation, the sense of humor and the patience.